Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to make a presentation at this very historical conference on José Rizal. It is of course, an honor for me to be invited to do this. It is also somewhat nerve-wracking for me to be speaking about Rizal. I've spoken about Rizal many times, but never in front of so many Filipinos. Now, in the little time that I have, about 30 minutes, I want to make a case that there is a sociology to be found in the work of José Rizal, and that this is a sociology of colonial society, and that such a sociology has been marginal to the canon, has been marginal to the discipline of sociology, and I think the same point can be made about other disciplines in the social sciences and humanities. A thinker like José Rizal has been marginal, even though there is great potential for the ideas and concepts to be found in Rizal's works to make an entry into the various disciplines of the social sciences. Rizal was probably the first systematic social thinker in Southeast Asia. While he was not a social scientist, it is possible to construct a social theory from his thoughts, a theory that focuses on the nature and conditions of Filipino colonial society and the requirements for emancipation. The need for the construction and elaboration of Rizal's sociology of colonial society is all the more felt when it is realized that the register of classical sociological theories is exclusively Euro-American, as if to say that there were no thinkers in Asia, Africa, and Latin America who systematically and creatively reflected on the fundamental issues of sociological concern in the 19th century. Here, I refer to the context of Eurocentrism. The intellectual context of my thoughts on Rizal is the relative marginal status of Rizal in the various disciplines of the social sciences and humanities. I suggest that Rizal should not be confined to Philippines area studies, no more than Emile Durkheim should be confined to French area studies or Max Weber to German area studies. There is a need to see the universal in the particular. In the case of Rizal, it is seeing universally relevant ideas relating to oppression, alienation, corrupt government, hypocrisy, reform, and emancipation in the particularity of the Philippines case. The inability to do this is the central feature of Orientalism today, an Orientalism that pervades the social sciences and humanities, not in terms of the blatant racism of Orientalist scholarship of past centuries, but in terms of the neglect and indifference towards native views. It is indeed paradoxical that Rizal remains completely relevant to the study of society, political economy, and history today, as he was in his own time, but is neglected by those very disciplines that should draw upon his work. Most of the discourse in sociological theory is informed by the traits of Eurocentrism. That is, the traits of Eurocentrism include the subject-object dichotomy, the dominance of European categories and concepts, and the representation of Europeans as the sole originators of ideas. In most textbooks in the social sciences, and certainly in sociological theory, the subject-object dichotomy is dominant, if not an articulated principle of organization. Euro-Americans theorize and write on the nature of society. They are the knowing subjects. When non-Europeans appear, they do so usually as objects of study of European theorists, and they are not featured as knowing subjects. Most students and scholars of sociology imagine that in the 19th century, which is the formative period of the development of sociological theory, it was only Europeans such as Marx, Weber, Durkheim, and others who were thinking about the nature of society and its development, and that there was no significant sociological contributions from thinkers in other parts of the world during the same period. It seems fitting, therefore, to provide examples of social theorists of non-European backgrounds, and José Rizal, of course, is an exemplar for this. Rizal raised original problems and treated them in a creative way. He wrote on topics and theorized problems that should be of interest to those studying the broad-ranging macro processes that have become the hallmark of classical sociological thought and theory. Rizal lived during the formative period of sociology, but theorized about the nature of society in ways not done by Western sociologists. He provides us with a different perspective on the colonial dimension of the emerging modernity of the 19th century. Every discipline has a number of characteristics. It has its purpose, subject matter, problems, and methods. The purpose of a sociology that we may construct out of Rizal's works would be to understand the emergence and nature of society. The subject matter of Rizal's sociology is the colonial society of the Philippines. Its problems are the explanation of the true conditions of colonial society and an exposé of the myths that veil these conditions. What I do in my presentation is to discuss what a sociology constructed from the works of Rizal might look like. If we were to construct a sociological theory from Rizal's works, three broad aspects can be discerned in his writings. First, we have his theory of colonial society, a theory that explains the nature and conditions of colonial society. Second, there is Rizal's critique of colonial knowledge of the Philippines. And finally, there is his discourse on the meaning and requirements of emancipation. In Rizal's thought, the corrupt Spanish colonial government and its officials exploit Filipinos while at the same time blaming the backwardness of the Filipinos on their alleged laziness. But Rizal's project was to show that in fact the Filipinos were a relatively advanced society in pre-colonial times, and that their backwardness was a product of colonialism. The basis of Rizal's sociology is his critique of the myth of the indolent Filipino. It is this critique and the rejection of the idea that the backwardness of Filipino society was due to the Filipinos themselves, but rather to the nature of colonial rule, that provides the proper background for understanding Rizal's criticism against the clerical establishment and the colonial administration. Rizal noted that the Spaniards blamed the backwardness of the Filipinos on their indolence. The Spaniards charged that the Filipinos had little love for work. As my late father, Said Hussein Alatas, noted, the unwillingness of the Filipinos to cultivate under the encomenderos was interpreted out of context and understood to be the result of indolence, which was in turn attributed to their nature, in other words, to the nature of the Filipinos. Rizal, however, made a number of important points in what was the first sociological treatment of the topic. In Rizal's treatment of the myth of the Filipino, of the myth of Filipino indolence, in his famous essay, The Indolence of the Filipinos, He defines indolence as little love for work, lack of activity. He then refers to indolence in two senses. First, there is indolence in the sense of the lack of activity that is caused by the warm tropical climate of the Philippines that requires quiet and rest for the individual, just as cold incites him to work and to action. Rizal's argument is as follows, I quote, "The fact is that in the tropical countries, severe work is not a good thing as in cold countries, for there it is an annihilation, it is death, it is destruction. Nature, as a just mother knowing this, has therefore made the land more fertile, more productive as a compensation. An hour's work under that burning sun and in the midst of pernicious influences coming out of an active nature is equivalent to a day's work in a temperate climate." Unquote. What Rizal is referring to here is the physiological reaction to the heat of a tropical climate, which, strictly speaking, is not consistent with his own definition of indolence, which is little love for work, The adjustment of working habits to the tropical climate should not be understood to be a result of laziness or little love for work. However, there is a second aspect of Rizal's concept of indolence that is more significant, sociologically speaking. This is indolence in the real sense of the term, that is, little love for work or the lack of motivation to work. I quote Rizal again, "The evil is not that a more or less latent indolence exists, but that it is fostered and magnified. Among men as well as among nations, there exist not only aptitudes, but also tendencies towards good and evil. To foster the good ones and aid them, as well as correct the bad ones and repress them, would be the duty of society or of governments, if less noble thoughts did not absorb their attention. The evil is that indolence in the Philippines is a magnified indolence, a snowball indolence, if we may be permitted the expression, an evil which increases in direct proportion to the square of the periods of time, an effect of misgovernment and backwardness, as we said, and not a cause of them." Unquote. The weakness of Rizal's argument here is that he did not make a distinction between the lack of activity induced by the tropical climate of the Philippines, and which he mistakenly referred to as indolence, and indolence in the true sense of the term, that is, the lack of motivation to work. Nevertheless, Rizal's important contribution, his important sociological contribution, is his raising the problem of indolence to begin with, as well as his treatment of the subject matter, particularly his view that indolence was not a cause of the backwardness of Filipino society. Rather, it was the backwardness and disorder of the colonial administration that caused indolence. Indolence was a result of the social and historical experience of Filipinos under Spanish rule. Rizal examined historical accounts by Europeans from centuries earlier, which showed Filipinos to be industrious. This includes the writings of De Morga. Therefore, indolence must have social causes, and these were to be found in the nature of colonial rule. Prior to colonial rule, Rizal noted, Filipinos controlled trade routes, they were involved in agriculture, mining, and manufacturing. But when their destiny was taken away from them, they became indolent. This position reflected Rizal's concern with the state of Filipino society prior to the colonial period. Rizal noted, for example, that the Filipinos worked more and they had more industries when there were no encomenderos. That is, when they were heathens, as Morga himself asserts. I'm quoting, "The Indios, seeing that they were vexed and exploited by their encomenderos, on account of the products of their industry and not considering themselves beasts of burden or the like, they began to break their looms, abandon the mines, the fields, etc., believing that their rulers would leave them alone on seeing them poor, wretched, and unexploitable. Thus they degenerated, and the industries and agriculture so flourishing before the coming of the Spaniards were lost. The theme of indolence in colonial scholarship is an important one that formed a vital part of the ideology of colonial capitalism. Rizal was among the first to deal with it. Prior to Rizal, the scribe and social thinker of colonial Malaya, Abdullah Munshi, had also discussed the theme of indolence, but Rizal had discussed the theme of indolence in a much more systematic manner. Some 20 or 30 years after Rizal, the Brazilian social thinker and scholar Gilberto Freire also discussed in his classic Masters and Slaves, his book called Masters and Slaves, also discussed the problem of the Portuguese characterization of Brazilian natives as indolent. In Southeast Asia, the theme of indolence was later taken up by Said Hussein Alatas in his seminal work, The Myth of the Lazy Native, which contains a chapter entitled The Indolence of the Filipinos, in honor of Rizal's essay of the same title. Referring to Rizal's treatment of the subject, Alatas states that it is not reasonable to call the absence of the will to work conditioned by the exploitative conditions of colonial rule indolence. Indeed, there is a need to revise Rizal's definition of indolence, as little love for work or lack of activity under conditions that are held to be favorable. Said Hussein Alatas did note, however, that Rizal's explanation of the lack of motivation to work amongst the Filipinos by recourse to historical and sociological factors is on the whole sound. I take Rizal's essay on the indolence of the Filipinos to be the basis of his sociology of colonial society. His critique of the idea of indolent Filipinos suggests two other themes of sociological relevance which he himself developed. These are, one, the need to critically assess dominant colonialist views, which Rizal extended to the study of colonialist history, and two, the need to examine the real causes of the backwardness of Filipino colonial society. I would like to make a few remarks in the remaining time that I have on these two other themes of sociological relevance that Rizal developed. First of all, the critique of colonial history. During Rizal's time, there was little critique of the state of knowledge about the Philippines among Spanish colonial and Filipino scholars. Rizal, being well acquainted with Orientalist scholarship in Europe and was aware of what today would be referred to as Orientalist constructions. This can be seen from his annotation and republication of Antonio de Morga's Historical Events of the Philippine Islands, which first appeared in 1609. Rizal republished this work with his own annotations in order to correct what he saw as false reports and slanderous statements to be found in most Spanish works on the Philippines, as well as to bring to light the pre-colonial past that was wiped out from the memory of Philippines, from the memory of Filipinos by colonization. This includes the destruction of pre-Spanish records, such as artifacts, that would have thrown light on the nature of pre-colonial society. Rizal found Morga's work an apt choice, as it was the only, as stated by Ambeth Ocampo, the only civil history of the Philippines written during the Spanish colonial period, other works being mainly ecclesiastical histories. The problem with ecclesiastical histories, apart from the falsifications and slander, was that they, as Rizal said, abound in stories of devils, miracles, apparitions, etc., these forming the bulk of the voluminous histories of the Philippines. For Rizal, therefore, existing histories of the Philippines were false and biased, as well as unscientific and irrational. What Rizal's annotations accomplished were the following. It provides examples of Filipino advances in agriculture and industry in pre-colonial times. It provides the colonized point of view of various issues. It points out the cruelties perpetrated by the colonizers. It furnishes instances of hypocrisy of the colonizers, particularly the church. It exposes the irrationalities of the church discourse on colonial topics. Now, I'm not going to go into more detail about that because of the lack of time. The other theme that I mentioned was Rizal's assessment, his discussion on what he understood to be the real causes of Filipino backwardness. Rizal noted that the miseries of a people without freedom should not be imputed to the people, but to their rulers. Rizal's novels, political writings, and letters provide examples such as the confiscation of lands, appropriation of labor, of farmers, high taxes, forced labor without payment, and so on. Colonial policy was exploitative despite the claims or intentions of the colonial government and the Catholic Church. In fact, Rizal was extremely critical of the, quote, boasted ministers of God and propagators of light who have not sowed nor do they sow Christian moral. They have not taught religion but rituals and superstitions, unquote. This position required Rizal to critique colonial knowledge of the Philippines. He went into history to address the colonial allegation regarding the supposed indolence of the Filipinos. This led to his understanding of the conditions for emancipation and the possibilities of revolution. Rizal, therefore, had to think about the whole issue of enlightenment and the relationship between enlightenment and emancipation. As Rizal began to develop a greater commitment to the idea of freedom, to the idea of freedom of thought and inquiry, the question of his religiosity emerged. And in connection with this, in a letter to his mother in 1885, Rizal states, "As to what you say concerning my duties as a Christian, I have the pleasure of telling you that I have not ceased believing for a single moment in any of the fundamental beliefs of our religion. The beliefs of my childhood have given way to the convictions of youth, which I hope in time will take root in me. Any essential belief that does not stand review and the test of time must pass on to the realm of memory and leave the heart. I ought not to live on illusions and falsehoods. What I believe now, I believe through reason, because my conscience can admit only that which is compatible with the principles of thought. I believe that God would not punish me if, in approaching Him, I were to use His most precious gift of reason and intelligence." Unquote. The backwardness of colonial society was not due to any inherent defects of the Filipino people, but to the backwardness of the Spaniards, including the church. Emancipation could only come about from enlightenment. Spanish colonial rule was exploitative because of the backwardness of the church, in that the church was against enlightenment and the supremacy of reason. The European Enlightenment was good for Filipinos, while the church was against it because it established reason as authority and not God or the church. Now, it's interesting to note that during the same period, European thinkers such as Marx, Weber, and Durkheim, and many others, were products of the Enlightenment, but recognized that reason had gone wrong. modernity, which was a creation of reason, had become unreasonable for many European writers contemporaneous with Rizal, because it was alienating, anomic, and ultimately irrational. It is interesting to note that Rizal, who was also writing in the 19th century, had a different attitude to the Enlightenment and to reason. His writings do not show disappointment with reason, and he was not dissatisfied with modernity in the way that Marx, Weber, and Durkheim were. This is probably due to Rizal's view, or this was probably because for Rizal, the Philippines was not modern enough and was kept backward by the anti-rational nature of colonial rule and the church. Now, what I've done is to, I'm concluding now, and what I have done is to present some ideas that would form the framework or outline of a sociology of colonial society based on the thinking of Rizal. Now, Rizal was probably the first thinker, certainly the first thinker in Southeast Asia, and perhaps even in Asia, to reflect critically, to critique colonial knowledge, and to suggest ideas and explanations for history and the nature of society from a different perspective that was consciously critical and even antagonistic towards received European ideas. Much later, 50, 60, 70 years after Rizal wrote, there had been much talk in Asia and in Africa and also in Latin America about the need for an autonomous social science tradition defined as one which raises problems, creates concepts, and creatively applies theories in an independent manner and without being dominated intellectually by another tradition. Social scientists that operate within such a tradition are practitioners of what I call alternative discourses in the social sciences. Alternative is being defined as that which is relevant to its surroundings, creative, non-imitative, non-essentialist, counter-Eurocentric, autonomous from the state, and autonomous from other national or transnational groupings. The example of the works of José Rizal has brought out a number of features of autonomous or alternative social sciences. These can be listed as follows. Attention to Rizal suggests alternative research agenda undermined by interests in the world's social science powers. On the agenda would be research topics such as the study of laziness and indolence, the ideologies relating to indolence and laziness, the study of religious revival in the context of various types of solidarity. Another very interesting theme, which has not been the topic of systematic studies in social sciences and humanities, but which emerges in results thinking, is the theme of hypocrisy. In an age where politicians and religious leaders in the name of various religions make various claims but engage in actions that are contrary to their claims, it is a theme which requires serious systematic study, especially from the points of view of philosophy, psychology, and sociology. Attention to Rizal also reverses the subject-object dichotomy in which the knowing subjects in social thought and social theory are generally Western European and North American white males. In this paper, Rizal is not regarded merely as a source of data or information, but is seen as a knowing subject, providing us with concepts and theories with which we may engage in the reconstruction of reality. Finally, attention to Rizal suggests the need to replace the domination of European-derived categories and concepts with a multicultural coexistence of the same. The idea is not to displace European-derived concepts, but to create the conditions for concepts from various civilizational backgrounds in order that they be known and utilized. The idea behind promoting scholars like José Rizal and a host of other well-known and lesser-known thinkers in Asia, Africa, and Latin America, and Eastern Europe, as well as in Europe and North America, is to contribute to the universalization of the social sciences and humanities. Disciplines like sociology may be global, but they are not universal as long as the various civilizational voices that have something to say about society are not rendered audible by the institutions and practices of our discipline. Thank you very much.